Jim Elliott and four other missionaries, Nate Saint, Ed McCauley, Peter Fleming, and Roger Udarian, were seeking to reach out to a fierce Ecuadorian tribe known as the Alcas when those same Indians turned on them. The shocking news of the deadly attack spread around the world. But Jim's widow, Elizabeth, surprised many when she and her young daughter, Valerie, lived there with the same tribe for 2 years. On Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares with you the lessons learned through that and many other events in her remarkable journey. Thanks for joining us for Gateway to Joy. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you today about making a home. I may be talking to some today who wish with all their hearts that they could make a home, and you really feel that you have no possibility of that. Maybe you live in one room. Maybe you don't even live in one room that you can call your own. Maybe you have to share a room with someone. But I'm convinced that deep down in the heart of every one of us women, there is that ancient nest-making instinct. The desire and even the gift of making a cozy and comfortable place in the most unlikely situations. I'm talking to you today as a woman who has lived in a good many very different kinds of places. I spent 11 years as a missionary in South America, and in those 11 years, I counted up, I think, 14 different houses that I lived in. Houses ranging from a very civilized place in the city of Quito, where I studied Spanish, a house belonging to a cultured Ecuadorian couple, everything from that down to a house in Auca territory, a house with no walls and no floors and no furniture. But I want to tell you a little bit today about my first home in the western jungle of Ecuador. In my last talk, I told you about my journey down from the city of Quito into Santo Domingo in the western jungle between the Andes and the Pacific Ocean. My friend Dorothy and I had been transported from Quito down into the jungle on the back tailgate of a pickup truck belonging to a missionary whom I'll call E.T. He and his wife occupied the front seats, and the back of the truck was filled with cargo, and we sat on the tailgate. I think it was about a 10-hour journey. You can imagine that by the time we got to where we were going, our derrieres were slightly sore. We got there after dark, and E.T. began unloading the cargo. I had to say that my curiosity was stretched to the limit over all this stuff that was in the back of the truck. I really could not imagine what he was carrying down there. It seemed far more than he and his family could use. Well, it was. What I was not used to at that point was that when missionaries go anywhere in a car, they are expected to transport all the people and cargo and chickens and pineapples and pigs and whatever else people would like them to carry. Well, E.T. didn't have any chickens and pigs on this trip, but he did have 100-pound sacks of flour, huge, maybe 25, 30-pound sacks of lentils and macaroni, and all of this stuff had to be carried into the house. There were four children who came tumbling out of the house when we arrived. As far as I could tell, none of them spoke English, although they were obviously E.T.'s children. They had that American look about them. But they spoke Spanish to each other and Spanish to their parents. Dorothy and I were shown into a room, which opened into two other rooms, and there were no doors. In fact, the house seemed to have four rooms, all of which opened into each other. As for sanitary facilities, they were, shall we say, very simple indeed, very primitive. There was an outhouse at the back of the lot, a sort of a crazy, crooked affair with a door that didn't really close very securely. And then I noticed that there was an empty lot next door, which seemed to be the public outhouse. There was a continual train of people moving in and out of that lot, and as I could see, they were not really looking for privacy, they were just looking for space, judging by the care with which they were picking their way across the lot. It was very obvious that this was the town latrine. So I was very grateful for the outhouse. It's all relative, isn't it, when you find yourself with none of what we think of as the modern conveniences, then you begin to understand that all of these things are just relative and really no big deal. Dorothy and I managed to sleep fairly well that night. We were given two cots. And the next day, my main desire was to get out of that house. It was a chaotic place. There seemed to be all kinds of people coming and going, people buying things and selling things and coming for medicines, and the children were running in and out, and far more than the four children that belonged to the missionaries. And the wife of E.T. was terribly busy, and I could see that she didn't need two more guests. And after having tried several times unsuccessfully to offer our services, I just said to Dorothy, well, why don't we go for a walk? And so we went out and walked around the little town of Santo Domingo, which back in those days looked like a Hollywood set for a Western. It was a primitive place. There were no paved roads. It was all pretty muddy. The shops were set in a square around a sort of plaza, and it was mud everywhere. In the middle of the plaza were the huge banana trucks. Santo Domingo depended entirely on the banana business, and probably many of the bananas that you buy today in your supermarket would come from that area of Ecuador. And I noticed that these trucks were American truck bodies, but they had added to them ungainly wooden bodies built onto the chassis and painted all colors of blue, red, pink, hot pink, yellow, green, and decorated with pictures and curlicues and mottos and names like Hitler, Mother of God, Little Angel, the Bull, or the Sacred Heart of Jesus, names denoting power. It took me a while to realize the importance of these trucks. They were the very heart and life of the jungle, and the owners of these trucks would go into terrible debt for many years in order to buy one. And so they were coddled and watched over and polished and taken good care of, although they made the grueling journey up to Quito, which was almost 10 hours in second gear, every other day or so. Well, it turned out that E.T. had a banana truck, too, and I saw that he was much distracted from what we thought of as missionary work by his banana business. Well, we stayed for all of that day, one more night, and then the following day we were to reach our final destination, which was in San Miguel, a little clearing further in the jungle that we could reach only by horseback. We were able to hire ponies, what I would call ponies. The Indians called them horses, but they were very small. We were able to hire them for about 90 cents a day. I had one pair of saddlebags that I had brought with me from the States that I'd bought in an army surplus store in Philadelphia. We loaded our boxes with our other things on mules, and we set off over the four-hour trail. It was a muddy trail, the horses sinking sometimes almost to their bellies, and we were splashed almost from head to toe with mud, but it was a beautiful ride through giant ferns, tropical trees, jungle, elephant ears. Every now and then we were surprised by sweet fragrances of flowers that we were not able to see. Then I recognized the huge spreading breadfruit tree, recognized it only from pictures, and occasionally we passed travelers going the other way back to Santo Domingo, and most of them were leading donkeys that were carrying huge round balls of brown sugar, balls about almost the size of basketballs. This was the product that the jungle produced to take out to the white man's village of Santo Domingo. After 4 hours or so, we reached the clearing which was to be our destination. There were six or eight wooden houses, and from one of them suddenly I saw a figure dressed in a light-colored dress come flying out the door. And this was Doreen, my colleague for that year, an English woman that I had met in New York several years before. "Welcome to San Miguel on the Mud," she said. But she said it in her British accent, which I won't attempt to reproduce here. And she took us into her house, which was quite civilized, with a large room and screened windows. I remember very well the fact that she had about 6 or 8 different patterns of cretonne and cotton slip covers. She had many different colors of cretonne and slip covers and pillows and tablecloths. And I learned that the English people like as many patterns as they can get together in one room. It looked a little bit frantic to me, but as Doreen said, it's better than no color at all. She had a bedroom partitioned off with a real bed with springs, and I thought, well, things really are more civilized than I expected. And she had a stack of covered boxes which served as a dresser. Then she had a little kitchen with some gasoline pressure stoves and a sort of a sandbox in which a fire was built, and a clothesline which ran from her back door to a pulley attached to a tree so that she could hang up her clothes without going downstairs. Many different little ingenious conveniences that gave me hope that things need not be quite so primitive as I had imagined. I remember very well the menu that she served us that day we had lunch. We sat down to a table covered with a green and orange plaid tablecloth. I remember that we had spinach soup, rice, fried eggs, and tea. And most vividly, I remember a little pitcher containing the cooled boiled milk for our tea, which was covered with a scalloped crocheted doily, weighted around the edges with glass beads. I've since learned that this is very typically English. Well, so this was going to be the area in which we lived. I will describe our house a little bit later in another talk. But I thought of the words of George MacDonald, "No place on earth henceforth shall I count strange, for every place belongeth to my Christ." Are you feeling a little strange in the place where you are today? Remember that every experience, if offered to Jesus, can be your gateway to joy.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliot has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.